Welcome to the Hospital Finance Podcast, your go-to source for information and insights that can help you protect and enhance revenue at your hospital. And now, the host of the Hospital Finance Podcast, Michael Passanante.
Hi, this is Mike Passanante, your host for the Hospital Finance Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Mary Devine. Mary is a senior manager in our revenue cycle team here at Bessler Consulting. And she's going to walk us through compliance pitfalls and how to understand RAC findings on your discharge status. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you.
So let's jump right in with the first question. It's my understanding that the RACs have included discharge status as one of their underpayment reviews. What are they looking for?
Well, I first want to point out that not all the RACs have the issues listed, so providers need to review their RAC issues on the RAC websites and determine if their RACs are reviewing this or not. We know that this issue is, in fact, present with providers who have Cahaba and Noridian as their MACs. In addition, CGI is auditing hospital-to-hospital transfers and what CGI is looking at. So if you say the patient is an O2 and they were intended to transfer to acute care hospital, they're going to confirm that, in fact, the patient was transferred. Health Data Insights, or HDI, the RAC for Region D, they are targeting IRFs, inpatient rehab facilities, again, looking to confirm that if you state that the patient left your inpatient rehab facility and was going to an O3, they're going to look to confirm that the patient was, in fact, transferred. And overall, the RACs are looking to confirm that whatever you put on your claim as the discharge status location, that's in fact where the patient did go and they did receive those services. Because keep in mind that as part of the post-acute transfer rule, the discharge status does impact your payment. And if you put on a code that was not impacted by the rule, you would have received an overpayment and they are going to look to take the money back.
Okay. Would you compare the RAC's approach to an internal review or a vendor review?
For the most part, I need to point out that the RAC's review is an automated process as it relates to reviewing the discharge status. This really means that the RAC relies on the information provided in their database, which consists of the common working file, which I'm sure you are all familiar with, and the data sets. And we know the data sets are the claims data that they received from all the providers that CMS governs. So that's a lot of data for the RACs to have to review. Your internal approach is really, or your vendor approach, you know, many of you have vendors doing this process, is really composed of potentially the use of the common working file and some of the provider data claims. But hopefully your steps also include validation process as you go through and you look at to confirm the services provided post-discharge. And that's why, you know, we really encourage people to confirm what the RACs are doing to make sure that whatever the RAC comes back as a discharge status, you confirm that that's correct because their process is purely automated.
So why would the RAC identify underpayments after a vendor review?
As I mentioned above, the RAC is an automated process and relies on established computer algorithms. These algorithms are logic written based on the post-acute transfer rule and the available data the RACs have. This process does not take into consideration the fact that there are some post-acute care providers that may not have submitted a claim to Medicare. And if there isn't a claim in Medicare, then the RACs are saying it's an underpayment. So I look at, for example, if you code your claim as an O3 and you didn't have a qualifying stay, so the patient did in fact transfer to a SNF and the SNF couldn't bill for that SNF level of care because they only were in the hospital for 2 days, Medicare is not going to have a claim on that. So that RAC is going to pick that up as an underpayment when, in fact, you made the validation calls to confirm, yep, the patient did, in fact, receive SNF, and you should not have received additional money for that stay. So it's really all about going through the validation steps.
So walk us through the exact issues that the RACs are reviewing.
Sure. And this answer does depend on your specific Mac and rack, but there are some issues that are being reviewed by some of the racks that I'm happy to discuss. Racks are looking at hospital-to-hospital discharges, as I stated before, and they are confirming claims with an O2 actually receive services at a receiving acute care facility. We also know that RACs are looking at transfers to O6 to confirm the patient received home care within 3 days of the date of discharge, and that's the rule. It has to be home care within 3 days of date of discharge. RACs are also looking at O2s. They left the acute care facility, and they went to a SNF facility. And we also know that Region D, as I mentioned above, that they are specific to reviewing not acute care facilities, but in-hab rehab facilities looking to confirm that transfers did occur. And you need to keep in mind that all these reviews rely on the presence of a claim with Medicare to substantiate the services provided post-acute. If there isn't a claim submitted to Medicare, then they will not determine the claim to be paid appropriately and will recommend that the claim was paid as an underpayment and will give you the underpayment reimbursement.
So can you give us some specific examples where the RAC might find an inappropriate discharge status and it's not correct?
Sure. And it's kind of bouncing off everything that I said before. So again, if a patient was discharged from an acute care facility, an O2, and they went to a SNF, it was coded as an O3, and the patient, lo and behold, they were in the hospital for 2 days, and they transferred to the SNF, and there was enough needs from the patient's perspective that they needed a skilled level of care. But Medicare requires a 3-day qualifying stay in order for that skilled nursing facility to actually bill Medicare. And unless the facility submitted a zero pay claim, and most of them don't, then, in fact, the RAC would go behind and say, okay, here's the O2, and I do not see an O3 claim that has an admit date on the same day as the discharge. Therefore, you should have received the full DRG payment versus the per diem, and they're going to send you a results letter that says you were underpaid and the discharge status really should have been an O4 or an O1. Another scenario is, again, it's the same discharge status where the patient was in an acute care hospital and the patient was being transferred to a SNF, but their benefits exhausted. You know, they had a knee replacement 6 months ago, and it was a knee replacement that went bad and was infected, and the patient was in skilled care for a while, and the benefits exhausted. Again, the skilled nursing facility would not submit a claim for that because there's no money to be had. So when the RAC goes and looks to see if there's a SNF claim with an admit date the same as the hospital's discharge date, they will not find one. And again, they would issue you a results letter that says, we found that you were underpaid on this date of service. Your discharge status should have been an O4 and an O1, and you would receive additional money, but it is incorrect. And finally, it's relating to the home care, the rule says if the patient is discharged, they need to receive the post-acute care service within 3 days. And we all know that there's patients that are discharged with potentially pneumonia or UTI, and they go home and they're just not feeling up to it. Or for whatever reason, the nurse doesn't make it out to the house until the fourth day. Right now, the RAC is coming back and saying this should be a discharge status, O1, discharge to home. But if you review SE0801, Medicare says, I want to know that this patient was discharged and did receive home care. It just wasn't within the 3 days, and you should it should maintain the O6 but have the condition code 43 appended to the claim, which says, yep, I did receive home care, but it wasn't within the 3 days. So again, the RAC's going to look for the within the 3 days, and if they don't see it within the 3 days, they're going to give you a results letter that says the discharge status is incorrect. You should have made this an O1. And although in both of those scenarios you've received the full payment, the discharge status of an O6 appended with a 43 is in fact correct.
What can a provider do to prevent receiving an improper payment over or under?
Sure. Providers should make sure that they are reviewing all the recommended RAC adjustments, whether it be an overpayment or an underpayment, with the same scrutiny. If the RAC comes back and adjusts your DRG and you're going to receive less payment, you're going to spend a lot of time looking at that claim, and you should do that as well if it's an overpayment. So the internal process should validate the appropriateness of the results letter and not whether it's an underpayment or an overpayment. As with any other RAC decision, if you do not agree with the fact that they're taking it from an 03, which is a SNF, to an 04, which means it was basically long-term or custodial care, and you don't agree with that, you should appeal that. I know it sounds kind of ridiculous if you're going to appeal that they overpaid you, but the intent is you want your discharge status to be correct and compliant.
Mary, what can a provider do to ensure the RAC recommendations are not creating false claims?
The best way to ensure the RACs are compliant, you should be sure you have a strong internal process or vendor process that includes validation steps, ensuring an outcome that is compliant as it relates to the post-acute care transfer rule. And that's the best thing that you can do.
So, Mary, if a hospital has a RAC committee that handles all their RAC denials, should they treat these discharge status issues any differently?
You know, that really is a two-part response. First, of course, these denials should be tracked and monitored exactly how all your other RAC accounts are handled. You know, I really hate to call them denials, and that's why I'm trying to stay away from that word, because you need to remember that the RACs are really finding more underpayments as it relates to the discharge status than they are for overpayments. So I don't want to call them denials. And these accounts should be entered into your internal RAC tracking tool, just as all the other ones are, and they should receive the same attention as any other RAC account, regardless of the reason that they reviewed it and issued you a results letter. And I think the most important thing that you need to make sure happens with these accounts is that the people on your current RAC committee might not have the subject matter expertise as it relates to the PACT rule, and you need to make sure that these accounts are reviewed judged, if you will, by someone who has the PACT rule knowledge and knows how the rule should be applied to the discharge status and determining whether the patient was in fact transferred for additional post-acute care services or not. And once you have that process in place, I would make sure that you are having someone confirm your internal process to make sure that that's right, you know, recommending a vendor to take a look if needed.
So what should that internal process look like at a hospital?
We recommend a process similar to what we do at Bessler. This process involves key validation steps, all designed to validate the accuracy of the discharge status placed on the claim. And these steps would certainly include confirmation with Medicare. Transfer did, in fact, occur. So we call that the IVR, as you would know it, that you're calling the IVR and you're making sure that there wasn't a transfer. You're also looking at your common working file to determine if there was utilization within that benefit period. And then you want to confirm with the post-acute care provider the type of service provided post-discharge, looking to confirm, even though there wasn't a claim in Medicare, did the patient in fact receive skilled services or not? Did the patient in fact receive home care that qualified for Medicare home services? And then you want to make sure that you document the responses you received back from the post-acute care provider, and you want to include this documentation somewhere either in the EMR or somewhere electronically, so that if you should ever be audited, potentially by the RAC, the RAC might come back and audit your discharge status and tell you you were underpaid when you know, in fact, you weren't. And then if appropriate, you should update the discharge status and resubmit a claim or a claim reopening to Medicare.
So would you recommend an internal process for this or a vendor? Can you give us some of the pros and cons?
Sure. I really don't believe the process has to be one or the other. I would recommend a combination of both. At Bessler, we quite often go behind an internal process. The vendor can validate your internal process and make recommendations for improvement. So if you are doing an internal process and you bring in a vendor and they don't find much, well, you know, that's the best validation that you're doing a great internal process. And on the flip side, if you bring in a vendor and they find a bunch of stuff behind your internal process, well, that's, you know, twofold. Number one, you can look to improve your internal process. And number two, potentially you have just identified some underpayments. So I really do believe that it's a two-pronged approach and it isn't a one or the other.
Mary, thanks for all the great information and for spending some time with us today.
Thank you.
To learn more about how a secondary transfer DRG review could benefit your hospital, get our special report at Bessler.com/second look. That's Bessler.com/second look.
This concludes today's episode of the Hospital Finance Podcast. For show notes and additional resources to help you protect and enhance revenue at your hospital, visit Bessler.com/podcasts. The Hospital Finance Podcast is a production of Bessler Consulting.